Welcome to Traveling Culturati, where we explore cultures and share travel news, travel tips, destinations, and travel chats. Visit TravelingCulturati.com for more information.
Well, hey there, fellow Culturati. Javon Harley here, your host and travel pro for Traveling Culturati. Make sure you sign up for that travel club. Yes, indeed, at TravelingCulturati.com so that you can travel with us. Coming up already this year is Japan in May of 24. Visiting Tokyo, Osaka, and Kyoto, one of my favorite places. I actually love Japan. It's both with tradition and modernity and quirkiness and just about everything. And I absolutely love their food culture, and we're going to experience it all at the end of May of 2024. We still have a few spots left, and also to Peru in August of 2024. Going to Lima, Cusco, and of course Machu Picchu. But we're also adding a very cultural experience with the Afro-Peruvian community, and you don't want to miss that. Yes, Peru also is a very foodie culture destination. Ceviches, oh my goodness, I could eat ceviche all day, and the freshest you've ever had. What about those pisco sours? And did you know that Peru has the largest number of and varieties of potatoes in the world? Some wonderful, wonderful food and a wonderful cultural experience you won't want to miss. All you have to do is go to TravelingCulturati.com and sign up for that travel club. Also follow us on social media, Traveling Culturati. Yep, that's us. Well, welcome back to another week of travel news, travel tips, and travel chats. Today, we are talking about spring fling. Yes, spring has sprung, although the weather hasn't been cooperating too well. But that is soon going to change. We know that spring weather, too, is on the horizon, and it's a great time to travel. So we're going to talk about some of those destinations, places to go for spring, and we're also going to break it down per demographic, per generation. How do we all travel? Because we do travel differently. And then, of course, there's multi-generational travel. So we're going to break it all down for you today, where you can go and kind of what's trending per demographic. Now, we're also going to have Javon's Travel Minute and the culture report. But you know what we do. We always start with some travel news. And following up to our show from last week, there's an update with Boeing. Yes, Boeing's CEO, Dave Calhoun, has announced that he intends to leave his company by the end of the year. Yes, the company is having a major shakeup in leadership. Boeing's chairman and the head of commercial airplane unit is also leaving. Larry Kellner will not stand for re-election as a board director. The board has elected former Qualcomm CEO Steve Mollenkopf to succeed him. The company has also announced that Stan Deal, CEO of Boeing Commercial Airplanes, is retiring. Stephanie Pope, Boeing's chief operating officer since January, is taking his place effective immediately. Now, just as a reminder, Boeing has been riddled by more than 5 years of problems with its airplanes, including two fatal crashes of the 736 MAX in 2018 and 2019 that killed 346 people, and most recently, a door plug that blew out of the side of an Alaska Airlines 737 MAX 9 in January, leaving a gaping hole in the side of the plane. The problems have led to multiple groundings for safety issues and more than $31 billion in cumulative losses. You ever visit an airport and it's just an airport? It's just a terminal. You're just going to go there and check in for your flight and head to your terminal, head to your gate, and then off you go. But then there's an airport where the airport is a destination all its own. So yes, these are airports that architecturally are fascinating, and they're the most unique with airport architecture in the world. Now, this is according to Daily Passport. They have identified 8 airports that feature some of the world's most unique airport architecture. Denver International Airport in Denver, Colorado. I'm just happy that a U.S. airport made the list. It is America's largest airport by land area. And when you walk in, you're welcomed by a towering symbol of the region, a series of soaring fabric covered tents that represent Colorado's iconic Rocky Mountains. And then along with the prairie wagons and Native American teepee tents of the state's history. Designed with sustainability in mind, the translucent roof allows natural light to come in to the 2.6 million square foot Jeppesen Terminal. The airport's on-site solar farm consists of 9,000 panels that take advantage of Denver's 300 days of sunshine to produce 3.5 million kilowatts of electricity each year. And then there's the Haydar International Airport in Baku, Azerbaijan. The design of the airport there takes inspiration from Azerbaijani hospitality. Scattered throughout the terminal's passenger areas are a collection of wooden cocoons. And these spaces vary in size and host everything from cafes and kiosks to shops and a children's play area. The atrium floors, whose 3D diamond patterns mimic the cocoon's shingles. Now, architects use Dekton, a stone material known for its durability and uniform for natural color. The airport's exterior glass walls also permit daylight to bathe the interior. And there's Kansai International Airport in Osaka, Japan. It's set on an artificial island in Japan's Osaka Bay. Kansai International Airport became the world's first ocean airport when it was opened in 1994. It's located about 3 miles offshore. The airport can operate 24 hours a day with minimal noise pollution for Osaka's residents. Kansai's primary 1.1-mile-long terminal houses 42 aircraft gates and was the world's longest terminal when it opened. The building features 82,000 curving steel panels and a wave-like roof designed to not obstruct views from the control tower. It is deliberately lightweight in structure that can withstand the effects of an earthquake. And inside, travelers will find hanging sculptures by Japanese kinetic sculptor Susumu Shingu, which promote the natural flow of air emitted from huge ducts. Singapore. Shangji Airport in Singapore. Yes, it is often topping the lists of world's top 100 airports. The Singapore Shangji Airport is famous for its innovative amenities. It has a butterfly garden attached to a shopping center, the Jewel featuring the world's tallest waterfall, and passenger-friendly designs. Terminal 3 in particular features a steel and glass structure and a spacious 9-acre roof above the arrival, departure, and ticketing area. The terminal building has a light modulation system made up of glass. Madrid Barajas Airport in Madrid, Spain, one of Europe's busiest airports with 35 million annual passengers. It's looked to a design with a defined progression of spaces for its newest terminal. The resulting Terminal 4 opened in 2006 and has a distinctive wave-shaped roof that reflects the airport's surroundings. Inside, huge supporting trees line the roof and allow daylight to illuminate the upper level. The terminal features a north side orientation with facades facing east and west. Then there's Marrakesh Manara Airport. The airport has a canopy clad with white aluminum panels. The structure serves to protect terminal interior from the beating desert sunshine, and its facade appears to change color according to the time of day. Yes, and it's also decorated with Islamic motifs. Queen Alia International Airport in Amman, Jordan. It's also a canopy roof, and it's made up of concrete domes that evoke images of a campsite filled with the Arab desert's emblematic Bedouin tents. How cool is that? And then the last on the list here is Samui Airport in Thailand, opened in 1989 and is privately owned by Bangkok Airways. It's the second largest island located in the Gulf of Thailand, and the airport replicates its natural surroundings while incorporating elements of Polynesian architectural design. The use of palm leaves coupled with an open plan layout, and it acts as a natural cooling system, which in turn minimizes the airport's carbon footprint. It's a lush vegetation common throughout the concourse and unique touches like an aquarium in the restroom. So kudos to those 8 airports. Now, there are some other airports that are making travel a lot easier. So these are destinations where you would normally have to go into a major city or another more popular city and then find your way by road or maybe a smaller aircraft or just another mode of transportation to get to that destination. So these destinations now have their own airport, or they're coming soon. For example, Tulum, Mexico. So yes, getting to Tulum, 80 miles drive from Cancun used to be the way to go. But now there's going to be a new airport there, the Felipe Carrillo Puerto International Airport. And it's one of Mexico's most popular tourist hubs, and certainly as of recently. The airport officially opened to domestic flights in December of 23. Yeah, just recently. And welcome international airlines March 28. So yeah, just this past week. Multiple routes from American Airlines, Delta, United, JetBlue, and Spirit will launch throughout the year. Siem Reap in Cambodia have a brand new airport in Siem Reap, the gateway city to Angkor Wat, which is the UNESCO listed ancient temple complex that's one of the most popular tourist destinations in the country. You recall the movie Tomb Raider with Angelina Jolie? Yes, that was filmed there. The new airport will replace the older Siem Reap facility that was built in the 1930s, and it's about 25 miles east of the Angkor Wat temple complex. Now it's further away, but the new airport will make it easier for more tourists to access Angkor Wat because it will be larger, take in more flights, and it's also a little bit further away from the site, which means there's a bit of a protection there. The Amalfi Coast. So if you've ever gone to Italy and visited the Amalfi Coast, you know you couldn't fly there. Well, starting this summer, you can. Yay. So it'll make it a lot easier to get there as well. Dominica, the natural island of the Caribbean, they have started construction on its first international airport in late 2023, and it's set to be one of the island's largest construction projects ever. When it's completed by 2026, the new airport will replace the current regional facility that has just 3 gates. And lastly, Peru's Sacred Valley. So for the more than 1.5 million travelers who visit Machu Picchu every year, a simpler transit option will be available in 2026. The Chinchero Airport, located right in the middle of Peru's Sacred Valley. Currently, international visitors to Machu Picchu usually fly into Lima, connect to Cusco, which doesn't accommodate many international flights. And then it's also about 46 miles away from the archaeological site. Well, that's all I've got for travel news. And when I come back, I'm having a spring fling for spring vacations with a breakdown of generational statistics and trends.
This is Traveling Culturati. We explore cultures and destinations. We share travel news and travel tips to keep you well informed and prepared for your next travel adventure. So go ahead and up your travel game with Traveling Culturati. Visit travelingculturati.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Make sure you visit the website, travelingculturati.com. And don't forget to connect with me on social media and join that travel club.
And now, Javon's Travel Minute.
You know, part of spring travel is called shoulder season. And I like to compare shoulder season to brunch. Yeah, it's not breakfast. It's not lunch. It's brunch. The same kind of thing with shoulder season. It's not winter. It's not summer. It's not high season. It's not low season. It's wedged right there in between. And you know how brunch is. It's one of the best times of the day because you don't have to get up so early. You can kind of linger on. You can have that cocktail without judgment, all of those things. Well, Shoulder season is often the same thing. You have great weather. It's not cold. It's not winter. You're talking about spring or even fall. It's not the hot summer. You know, some destinations are just too hot to visit in the summer. And you don't have the crowds that accompany summer travel. So it's a beautiful time to go. Plus, it's going to be less expensive than your peak travel season. It's going to be less expensive than your summer season. And yes, it's going to be a little bit more than your winter or low season, depending on where you're traveling. But there are some destinations, especially those that get really hot in the summer or those tropical environments, that are much better visited in shoulder season. We're talking about May and June. So the month of May through the month of June, you can get some great prices, enjoy some great weather, and have some crowd-free destination experiences. This is Javon, and that was your Travel Minute. And it kind of goes with today's topic, which is spring. Spring has sprung, and so have spring vacations. You're talking about spring break and shoulder season travel. However, spring vacations aren't the same for everyone today. So I'm breaking it down by demographics. You're talking about Gen Z, Millennials, Gen X, and Baby Boomers. I'm also providing information on multi-generational vacations. Yes, for the whole family. There's a lot of benefit in traveling with the entire family. And it's just a great thing to do, really. And it's so much more enjoyable. I've done it with my family. Grandparents, aunts and uncles, nieces and nephews, children, and it just makes for a whole lot of fun. So which generation is traveling the most? According to Expedia, millennials travel the most compared to other generations, with an average of 35 days each year. This is very high compared to 27 travel days on average by baby boomers. So let's start with the baby boomers. Who are we talking about? We're talking about those who are born mid-40s to the mid-1960s. They are called the comfort-seeking explorers when it comes to travel. Some want to go where they haven't been before, simply because they may not be able to get there in the future. Some are okay with returning to a familiar place, a comfortable place, or maybe the same country but different cities or smaller towns. The most popular destinations for American boomers are Hawaii, Australia, Italy, and Alaska. But overall, Europe is the first choice for boomers when traveling internationally. Yeah, to the tune of 41% when taking a survey. This makes sense considering the diversity of places to visit in Europe, which appeals to different kinds of travelers. And it's not as long of a flight as other destinations. Also, boomers are more likely to take a trip of a lifetime. But it depends on what kind of boomer you are. If you're a younger boomer, this is the boomer generation that's just turning 60 this year. And here's why. They are more like Gen Xers. So tail-end boomers, they're also called Joneses. I'm in that group. Identify more with Gen Xers than we do with baby boomers. And they're trying to stay afloat in the overpriced real estate markets that made the boomer predecessors rich. They are caring for aging parents and are trying to help their children get a financial footing while social safety nets have kind of sagged a bit. But this is a very interesting age group because, again, they may have children in college or young adults helping them still become adults and then also taking care of aging parents. And they may also be grandparents by now as well. So it's a very interesting group versus the older boomers. Maybe their parents aren't here anymore, and so they don't have parents that they're taking care of. Their adult children may be in their 40s, maybe even 50s. And yes, they're grandchildren, but I think it's very different than someone who is just 60 years old. But it doesn't mean that these younger boomers with these responsibilities are not enjoying their lives. While many tail-end boomers don't have that lavish pension like the front-end boomers, there's no plans to retire and they still want to enjoy the last quarter of their life, basically not ready for the rocking chair. Baby boomers have witnessed significant changes in travel trends throughout their lives. Many are now retired or nearing retirement, allowing them more time to explore Europe extensively. Comfort and convenience are significant factors in their travel decisions, and boomers are willing to spend on premium travel experiences like luxury cruises, all-inclusive tours, and upscale accommodations. They prefer guided tours to explore historical and cultural sites in depth, often opting for packages that cater to their interests and needs. And this group is the least impacted by rising debt costs as they are largely retired. However, one trend that has emerged post-pandemic, with gap years no longer the preserve of the young, as nearly 4 in 10 baby boomers have decided to book a major trip, including cruises, city breaks, beach holidays, and the like. Now, let's talk about the Gen Xers. They are born between the mid-60s to the early 80s. Now, their travel style is indulgent and unique. On average, Gen X will take an average of 26 vacation days a year. Gen X represents a unique group of travelers with distinct preferences and spending patterns. Currently in their 40s and 50s, many Gen Xers are at a stage in life where they have established careers and financial stability that will enable them to indulge in travel. Gen Xers often prioritize comfort and convenience when it comes to accommodation. So Gen Xers and those tail-end boomers are kind of in the same grouping. And they're more likely to splurge on well-appointed hotels, boutique stays, or vacation rentals that offer relaxing and upscale experiences. And I have to say that that pretty much describes my friends and I. Travel destinations may be something like glamping, Martha's Vineyard, Dubai, South Africa. One other thing I wanted to mention about the Gen Xers that they're willing to spend on fine dining at renowned restaurants, food tours that explore local cuisine, wine tastings, and of course, those meaningful experiences or those cultural experiences. Now, millennials, they're born in the early 80s to the mid 90s. And they are considered to be the experience-seeking wanderers. And as mentioned earlier, they're spending on average 35 vacation days per year. They take advantage of weekends, holidays, and vacation days. They're making sure they're getting more vacation days even on their job, sometimes opting for benefits more than pay raise. And they're more likely to use all of those vacation days. So gone are the days of leaving vacation days on the table unused. Yeah, remember I did a report a couple of years back where there were so many vacation days that were unused by Americans. So the millennials are changing that. Yes, they are more adventurous, willing to travel solo, use technology, travel without an itinerary, and stay in unique places. So for example, they'll go to Tulum over Cancun, look for out-of-the-way places, and again, those unique accommodations in Europe, maybe to Spain or Italy. Morocco is on the hot list, and so is Dubai and Bali. Most millennials have already established themselves in the workplace, giving them more disposable income compared with Gen Zs, who we're going to talk about next. They're known for their passion for experiences over material possessions, which extends to their travel preferences in Europe. Millennials are willing to spend more on immersive experiences like food tours, local wine tastings, and attending music festivals or cultural events. They will appreciate authenticity, but may also be open to spending on luxury accommodations and unique boutique hotels with character and charm versus the bigger chain luxury hotels. They also a bit more sustainable and eco-friendly travelers. They do look at considerations for sustainability and are willing to pay extra for eco-conscious accommodations and transportation. So now on to the Gen Zs, born late 90s and early 2010s. So they are called the adventurous yet budget conscious. Probably has a lot to do with their age and earning status, characterized by tech savviness and their desire for authentic experiences. Many Gen Z travelers are students or recent graduates or relatively new to the workplace, making budget-conscious choices a significant aspect of their travel spending. That means hostel stays, maybe. And hostels have come a long way, folks. Budget airlines and shared accommodations, platforms like Airbnb, they're very popular, enabling them to really stretch their budgets. I mean, look, now they're into this sharing culture. You think about ride share and accommodations as well. So all of these things kind of come together, but it is easier on the budget. Now, Gen Zs will also tend to spend generously on unique experiences, though. And I think that's something that all of the generations are experiencing. But they're more likely to try the street food tours. But boomers are a bit more cautious about that. Local art workshops and adventure activities, with social media being a driving force in their travel decisions. And this is according to American Express Travel's 2023 Global Travel Trends report that says that 79% of Gen Z and millennial respondents see leisure travel as an important budget priority. And 84% would rather take a dream holiday than purchase a new luxury item. And in addition, 70% of Gen Z and millennial respondents said that they have been inspired to visit a destination after seeing it featured in a TV series, a news source, or a movie, or on social media. The gram. Yes, Instagram has promoted a lot of travel, and it was really designed for photographs. And so, yes, an Instagram-worthy photo, and that sparks a lot of interest. But they will also do a lot of meetups. They too will do a lot of solo travel or meetups and using technology and social media to meet others from their country or city who will be traveling to the same destination. So very willing to do that. Now, there's also multi-generational travel. And you have to balance that multi-generational travel vacation. So think about it, balancing the adventurous yet budget-conscious Gen Z, the experience-seeking wanderer millennials, the indulgent and unique Gen Xs, and the comfort-seeking explorers, the boomers. So how do you put all that together, fitting in all of those different travel personalities and budgets? First, it depends on who's paying. Is everybody paying for themselves, or are the boomers paying for everybody? Or is grandma, or as we call them in our family, the GPs? We've given them that kind of title. The GPs, yeah, what are they up to today? Are they paying? And in some cases, they are. They want to take their families with them. Or maybe everyone's paying for different parts of the vacation. But you certainly have to consider that. You want to allow something for everyone. Have a planned itinerary, but not too scheduled. Because remember, not every demographic likes a planned or scheduled itinerary. Leave free time for each generation to have their own time. You're going to have each generation plan an activity for the entire family. That makes it very fun, and you get to learn a little bit more about each other as well. And then consider the boomers' age and ability and mobility. That's very important. Consider accommodations for the entire family, like a villa, a vacation rental, or an Airbnb. This may be more economical, but certainly will bring the family together. A vacation home could save on meals. Now, you don't want to cook every meal at home or in this environment. You will have things like breakfast on hand. You know, a lot of times you don't want to have to get up and go out and look for breakfast, but to be able to have it right there. Snacks, and of course, maybe have some nights in that you can enjoy. And if there are younger children that are involved, babysitting is a nice inclusion when mom and dad want to go out and have some time on their own. And it's a great bonding time for the GPs. Yes. So there's a lot of benefit in generational travel, and it's an excellent opportunity for bonding with the family and experiencing a foreign country, a different culture, a destination with your various family members is a whole lot of fun. I've done it with my family and have truly, truly enjoyed it. So let's talk about some of those spring vacation ideas for the different generations. I've given you a few, but also just some to think about in general. So sometimes we call it cabin fever or the winter blues. Yes, we're ready to get out into the spring air and breathe in new life, take in the nature. For those of us especially who live in four season destinations, by the end of winter, you're pretty much over it. You want some warmer weather. You want to see some flowers, some color. You want to get rid of the drab. Now, the only thing though with spring is while it brings the warmer weather and the beautiful flowers, you have to be prepared for unexpected weather conditions because you're in between those seasons. You know, winter sometimes doesn't want to go away and summer may be a little delayed in coming. So sometimes with spring, one thing we know is you're going to deal with some rain. April showers bring May flowers, yes. But also sometimes it can be chillier than normal or rain more than expected. It can be hot one day and cool the next day. So you definitely have to pack and prepare for fluctuating weather. But after perusing various sites and statistics, these are some of the top destinations for spring. Europe, yes, overwhelmingly tops the list with Spain, Portugal, Italy, France, Croatia, one of my favorites. The Maldives, it's a great time to visit the Maldives because they have a rainy season and a dry season, and the spring, our spring, is their dry season. South Africa is also a really nice time to go as well. It is their fall, but it's still quite warm there. So I just want to talk about those different destinations and why they've made this list. So like many European destinations, especially those that most of them are going to experience four seasons, spring is a great time to go, just like it's a great time here in the United States. And we'll talk about some U.S. destinations too. Yes, I never forget about the United States. But warm weather is returning to Spain, and certainly southern Spain is going to be a bit warmer than the northern parts. But again, avoiding the hot summer days and avoiding those summer crowds. Spain has some wonderful coastline in the southern parts and great cities, small towns, lots of culture. Landscapes can be absolutely beautiful. The medieval towns, the charming towns, the architecture, and of course the culture. Some of my favorites are Basque country like Bilbao and San Sebastian, Rioja for wine, Barcelona for the architecture, and Sevilla, which I visited for the first time last year. You then have Cordoba, which I absolutely love. The Moorish architecture and the history there is wonderful. Portugal, spring in Portugal is very delightful for many of the same reasons as Spain, but more coastline in Portugal, neighborhoods, lovely wine, going to Lisbon, going to Porto, and going to the Sintra Mountains, which is very nice. Italy. Now, Italy for me, spring and fall, but we're talking about spring today. It's certainly a popular destination year-round, but the landscapes in the spring and the cityscapes are just absolutely beautiful. And for those same reasons, for many European destinations, avoiding those crowds. But, you know, Italian food and wine, you just can't go wrong. Tuscany is one of my favorites, but of course, going to Rome is a must when you're going. France, of course, and going to some of those smaller towns. Certainly Paris is a great place to go and iconic in the museums, but Bordeaux, I absolutely love. Lyon, and some of those towns that are named after libations like cognac and champagne, those are wonderful places to visit. I'm going to skip forward to some of the U.S. destinations that are great spring break destinations. And I like these too for the multi-generational destinations. One is New Orleans. Food, music, culture, entertainment. A lot of times we think about it as an adult destination, but it really is for all the generations. Spring is also a great time where New Orleans have many festivals. They have the French Quarter Festival, April 11th through the 14th. The New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, April 25 through May 5. The Plaquemines Parish Seafood Festival, April 26th through the 28th. the NOLA Crawfish Festival, April 29th through May 1st, and the Bayou Boogaloo, May 17th through the 19th. But again, food, music, culture, maybe go out to the swamplands. That's always a ton of fun to do, but there's a lot of great things to do, history and culture in New Orleans. Hawaii is an all-time favorite. Honolulu is a great place to visit. You can do the road to Hana, the Banzai Pipeline for the surfers, food trucks, luau, pineapple plantations, and of course, the beautiful beaches in Honolulu. Plus, whale watching season runs from November through April in Hawaii. So in April is a great time to go for the humpback whale watching. And in some cases, like Maui, Oahu, and Kauai, you can see them just off the coast. You don't even need to go out in the water. We had a place one time, and we were out on the balcony, and you can just see the whales out there. And sometimes we would just go out on the balcony and watch them. Alaska is another great place to visit in the spring, and especially Anchorage, Alaska. It's a great time. Again, whales and other marine wildlife species return to the coast because the waters are getting warmer. Moose calves are born and bears come out of their dens. And of course, unlike bears, a few Alaska best activities never hibernate. It can be a year-round destination. But by the end of February, Anchorage gains an extra 42 minutes of daylight each week. And then after March 20th, Anchorage has more daylight hours than anywhere else in the 49 states. And of course, the temperatures are warmer, but there's a lot of picturesque snow-capped mountains still. And by early May, the sun won't go down until 11 p.m. So you have a lot of daylight. So again, spring is such a wonderful time to travel. So what is that going to look like? Well, spring travel fever is high, with many going to sun and sand. Nearly half, or 48% of Americans, are planning to travel during the spring months of March through June, heading to the beach or ocean, 47% exactly. Visiting with friends and family, 42%, and going to the mountains, just 25%. Social media has influenced travel for many, and of course, those younger generations. 29% of Americans say they have been encouraged to visit specific destinations thanks to social media. And certainly, it's led heavily by Gen Zers and 39% of millennials. However, some are traveling solely for the gram. Yeah, I talked about that earlier. 28% of spring travelers are going abroad, but they may not research exchange rates. And that's very important if you are traveling abroad to search those exchange rates. It may make a difference as to where you're traveling to. How strong is the dollar? These are some of the things that you want to consider. Probably why 72% of American travelers will stay closer to home. This way you know exactly. But you may be thinking, I want to go to a smaller town and not necessarily the big tourist populations or bigger cities. Go to some of the smaller towns where it's going to be less expensive. Your dollar's going to go a bit further. And what you want to avoid is going into debt. I got some statistics from the Lending Tree. And it says that most travelers will budget for their trips. Some will go into debt while away. Most travelers, meaning 65%, will head into their spring trips with a specific budget. Of the age group that was studied, younger demographics are more budget conscious, as we talked about earlier. 74% of Gen Z respondents and 73% of millennials say they have a specific budget in mind, compared with 67% of Gen X and only 44% of baby boomers. But you have to really look at the economic makeup. Baby boomers have less debt, right? They're retired, homes are paid off. They're probably not still buying luxury items and things like that, where the other generations entering into adulthood or already into adulthood may have more financial commitments and or debt than the boomers do. What is the average spend? The majority, or 71%, have budgeted under $3,000 for the springtime trips, but 21% plan to spend between $3,000 and $5,000. And 8% will spend $5,000 or more. And whether you use a credit card, make sure those credit cards are working for you. Maybe you get some cash rewards. Maybe you get some extra mileage. Maybe you can use your miles to purchase, especially some of those luxury items that you may want. And don't carry on a lot of credit card debt because, right, the credit card interest rates have increased substantially. So that's something that you want to look out for and make sure you can pay it off immediately or as quickly as you can. But definitely make sure that you have a card that is paying you back. So again, there's always a way to do it. Don't go into debt. Don't jeopardize your financial situation. You can budget. You can travel smartly. You can travel with family. I just say just travel, but do so responsibly. Well, I hope we've helped you today in your spring travel experiences or plans, but make sure you stay tuned because we have the Culture Report coming up.
This is Traveling Culturati. We explore cultures and destinations. We share travel news and travel tips to keep you well informed and prepared for your next travel adventure. So go ahead and up your travel game with Traveling Culturati. Visit travelingculturati.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Make sure you head on over to the website, travelingculturati.com. And make sure you sign up for that travel club. Culture is forever changing and reflecting what's happening in the society and with its people. It can be born of music, arts, food, and sometimes politics and strife. This is the Culture Report, and we're celebrating and honoring Women's History Month. And joining me today is someone who's definitely worthy of being celebrated. Fumzile Mazubuko, Chief Director for Central and Eastern Europe, Nordic and Baltic countries in the Department of International Relations and Cooperation in South Africa. Hello, Fumzile, and welcome to Traveling Culturati.
Hello, Javon, and hello to your listeners. It's wonderful to talk to you. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
It is certainly my pleasure. And I also want to add, formally, Consul General for South Africa here in the Chicago office. And this is where we met and certainly staying connected. But now you're back in South Africa.
Yes. The city of Chicago will always be home away from home.
Yes. Well, you know, outside of the world, you know, we just say South African woman. But in South Africa, of course, there are 9 different ethnic groups. So when you're in South Africa, do you refer more directly to your ethnicity?
You know, we have 11 official languages. My ethnicity or maybe my cultural background is I'm Zulu. So I'm a Zulu-speaking young woman. But by orientation, I do consider myself purely just a South African woman. But because of our history and the way our society is structured, you're able to know where somebody comes from, basically just through their name and surname, and already you can place someone's origin and history and ethnicity.
I see. Yeah, because when I go and I visit South Africa, I don't really think of who is Zulu or who is Xhosa, or I don't think of it in those terms, but I just wanted to know how it is locally, because, you know, who we are locally is very different sometimes of our forward face to the world.
Yes, no, very true. And I think because also it depends if you're coming from an urban or a rural area, because based on that, in urban areas, for instance, I'm from Soweto, which is a urban area. It's just a black township outside of Johannesburg. And mainly people there are cosmopolitan. There's lots of people from different areas of the country and people speak different languages. So you'll find that all 9-11 official languages are spoken within Soweto itself. So people, they know your background because of your name, but it's not such a big issue. But people coming from a more rural area, rural background, would even want to know what is your clan name, where do you come from, and those are important.
I see. Now, tell us a little bit more about your position in the Department of International Relations and Cooperation.
My position, I am working with the countries that are in Europe. So we always say that we look after the other Europe. So this is the Europe, not the Western part of Europe, but more the Eastern Europe. countries that are formerly part of the Soviet Union, some of them. Some of them are in the Nordic states in terms of the Balkan countries as well. So it's really interacting and managing relations between South Africa and those countries. Most of those countries have embassies here in Pretoria. So I am basically the liaison for the embassies. And we also have our own embassies in some of those countries. And I basically also am the liaison for our embassies in those countries.
Okay, so is it more of just the kind of inner workings, or is it more of a political position, or is it more of a commercial business type of position with the connection of those countries?
So it's both. We manage South Africa's foreign policy relations with those countries. And part of our foreign policy is to put more trade and investments both ways between South Africa and those countries. And so we manage both the trade and foreign policy relations between the countries.
And prior to that, as we mentioned earlier, you were here in Chicago as the Consul General. Tell us a little bit about that role.
The Consul General role, I was basically the head of mission and the face of South Africa in Chicago. I represented South Africa in 14 states in the Midwest region of the United States and with the base in Chicago. And basically, the role was to identify opportunities for South Africa, especially trade and investment and commercial opportunities, but also to engage in people-to-people cooperation, encourage more tourism from the Midwest into South Africa. And we also were the office that was providing support to South Africans in the Midwest. They utilized our office to be able to get their own documents from home. So we provided the consular support for South Africans that are living in the Midwest region.
And you can be honest with me here. How big of a culture shock was it for you to move to Chicago for a bit?
Oh, my word. So I was just actually telling one of the colleagues from Poland today that my first experience of snow was when I arrived in Chicago in January 2018 and just got my first experience of a very cold winter. And to see the first snowfall on the weekend, I think it was the Martin Luther Day long weekend in January, and my children and I had never seen snow before. We woke up in the morning and outside was just white and there was no thunder. And we were surprised, how did this happen? Because we're used to thunderstorms back home in Johannesburg. When it rains, you can hear the rumbling thunder and then you know to expect something big is coming. So the snow, it was just quiet. And the next morning we woke up and it was white. And we just wanted to just throw ourselves on the cushy snow. And yeah, only to discover that it's freezing cold. We could only last like 5 minutes. But it was just an amazing experience to experience snow for the first time with my three-year-old and seven-year-old at the time. It was super special.
Wow. And I remember going to South Africa one time, and I think it was maybe 65 degrees Fahrenheit. And I saw everyone walking around with these big coats on. And I thought, why do they have one of these big coats? So I can only imagine how cold it was for you here.
Oh, no, it was super cold. And I remember my colleague saying to me, we need to go take you shopping for a proper coat. And I was like, yeah, I need one.
And
because
and
my South African coats were not good. Exactly, proper boots and coats, because we were not prepared for the winter. And at the time, people were asking me, so what did you do in Pretoria to be sent to Chicago in January?
The coldest month of the year.
The coldest month of the year. They couldn't just let you come in the summer.
At least allow you some time to acclimate and have the winter slowly approach you rather than, no, you jumped in the deep end. Well, kudos to you for jumping in the deep end.
But the wonderful thing is that at the time, I couldn't imagine it getting warm. So when people would tell me, don't worry, it gets better, I was like, nah, I don't believe it. And when the summer came, it was like, what? So this is why they were saying, what did I do in January?
Yes, the summer is a beautiful time.
Amazing.
In yeah. Chicago. I have to ask, who was Phumzile as a young girl?
Oh, you know, I think as a young girl, Phumzile was a dreamer. I used to look up at the clouds and see a plane going, and I'd ask myself, I wonder where is this plane going? And at the time, I grew up under the system of apartheid. Nelson Mandela was still incarcerated. I was in elementary school, and he was released just as I entered high school. So I grew up during a time of transition, of change, of great hope, but also of great pain, because South Africa was going through a transition from an apartheid system, which was declared a crime against humanity. And at that time, you knew that as a young Black girl, there's certain opportunities that you might never have in life. And by the grace of God, apartheid did end. And the life that we had grown up imagining was now possible. And so I grew up in Soweto, you know, hoping for a better future, but didn't know what that better future entailed. But my parents were very clear that the better future comes with an education. And as teachers, both my parents were teachers in Soweto and had seen the struggle of the Black child wanting an equal education in a society where Black children were just supposed to get the bare minimum. So I grew up being an aspirational child, wanting to see better and do better.
And as you were able to gain education, and I love that you were a dreamer. I mean, I wish I was still a dreamer today. There's so much hope in that. There's so much joy in that. So as we become adults, we lose that part of our childhood, but it's something that's so endearing. What would you like most for people to know about South African women today? And I don't know if I need to add to that Black South African women.
I think that maybe you should say Black South African women, because there's just a little bit of a difference in terms of our experiences because of our history in South Africa. There's a development and opportunity difference between a white woman and a Black woman. But I'll start generally to say what you should remember about women generally in South Africa is that they're resilient, they're strong, and they are fun-loving, and they want to make our country a great place, and they do that. And specifically about Black women is that Black women, unfortunately, still bear the brunt of our challenges that we face as a country. We do find that poverty does bear a feminine face in South Africa, and Africa specifically, and that unfortunately it bears the feminine back face in terms of the poverty and the unemployment and the inequality that women face. But through it all, South African women are resilient, and they do everything with a smile and they shine.
Well, they certainly do. And I have had some wonderful experiences, relationships with South African women, and specifically Black South African women, and connected with some wonderful communities as well. And all of what you said is absolutely true. I want to thank you so much for joining me today. What an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Yvonne, for this opportunity. And it's lovely to reconnect with you. And please pass my greetings to all my friends in Chicago, a city which I will always love, which I carry in my heart.
We'll certainly do that. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen.
This is Traveling Culturati. We explore cultures and destinations. We share travel news and travel tips to keep you well informed and prepared for your next travel adventure. So go ahead and up your travel game with Traveling Culturati. Visit travelingculturati.com for more information.
Ladies and gentlemen.